This is, I think I'm right in saying, the 12th album that you've had since you went solo. And it's the first time that George has produced since Live and Let Die.
That's the only other one, yeah, since the Beatles that I've worked with George on. Yeah, I just really like him as a producer. I think he's a very good producer. And when you work with people who are very good like that, it makes it very much easier for yourself, you know. So after Live and Let Die, I didn't do anything for a while, and I continued working with Wings and stuff. And on this one, I just really thought, well, you know, it'd be really nice to have a change. I'll give George a ring, see if he fancies working with me, because, you know, I suppose there's the off chance that he'd say, oh, no, you know, maybe we better leave it. But he was interested in the idea. So we just got together and said, okay, come on, let's make an album.
As simple as that.
One of the things when George and I got together after all that time was we obviously sat down and said, well, what are we going to do here? You know, just a sort of another album, what do we want? Just a bunch of songs. Or are we going to try and do something a little bit different and do something, stretch ourselves, the kind of words George and I were using originally. And the nice thing about it is if you think that before an album, you may not end up doing exactly what you wanted to do, but at least the effort to stretch yourself changes things slightly, and certain things that might have been okay. For instance, on the orchestra on the opening track, Tug of War, we were quite happy with it, but we just weren't really over the top, so we decided to do it again, you know. And this is the kind of thing with George, he was just, oh, come on, you know, why don't we really get it right? And that's made the album really enjoyable, actually. You know, if you know that you're going to, in the end, you're going to have something very near to what you originally started off wanting, you get into the spirit of it. You think, hey, this is going to be good, you know, and actually start enjoying yourself. George's thing, obviously, you know, in the old Beatle days, was that he had quite a lot to say, you know, about the tracks and stuff. And, you know, you could listen to him and just sort of think, yeah, well, he knows what he's doing. And on this one, after all that time, it was really nice to get back into that old routine.
Welcome to episode 164 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. As you all know, we are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may know me from my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast. And I am joined by my partner in crime, my backwards traveler. He is Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, what's going on?
What's up, Tom? Ready to tackle Tug of War, 40 years
Tug
old.
Tug of War. Unbelievable.
I cannot believe it's 40 years old this month.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could say that this was like my first introduction to solo Paul, but we'll get into that in a few minutes. But first, I'm really excited to welcome back a legend in the podcasting world. I mean, he was part of one of the first Beatles podcasts, which was called the Beatles or the Fab Forum, right? Then that turned into Fab Four Free For All, and he's still doing that with Rob Leonard and Tony Trugardo. And he is also the author of Beatles Tunes, and he is Mitch Axelrod. Mitch, thanks for coming back. It's great to see you.
Oh, great to be seen. By the way, if he's your backwards traveler, am I your cufflink?
Yes.
I want to make sure. Or yes. Am I like,
yes.
Odd socks?
Yes.
Odd socks actually probably would be better. My wife
would
agree with that one. Odd socks. There you go. But anyways, Mitch, it was good seeing you. It was good seeing you at the fest. I think you were only there for the one day, but yeah. It was just really cool, you know, after waiting 2 years or 3 years, however you want to, yeah. Whatever way you think about it. It was just really cool seeing getting out and seeing everybody again. And that's what was really important to me, just, you know, seeing people that I originally met back in the 2018 White Elm Symposium, which you and Tony and Rob were at, and that was a lot of fun because you guys had a really cool discussion that that weekend. And man, it was just great seeing people. And you know, I think Rob Leonard was there as well. I was on a panel with him on Sunday. That was a lot of fun. So what you been up to?
Oh, same old stuff. You know, I have to agree with you on the fest, though. Sometimes, you know, we all agree that the guests are not great anymore because, you know what, frankly, they're all dying out. And the ones who would probably be good for it won't do it. We know who they are. So, but you know what? The true thing that Lapidos has brought to everybody for these past 40, 50 year, 45 year, whatever, is really the getting together of Beatle people. And that's the one thing that I missed. You know, I've been in contact with so many people for the last 3 years, and we kept saying, oh, let's get together, and then COVID.
Right.
And so finally seeing everybody at the fest, that's the real heart of what makes the Beatles so special, the community. And
I agree with you.
That was great. Right.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Very briefly, Mitch, it was nice to meet you briefly in passing for the first time.
Yeah.
The whole way there.
Well, there's a lot of that sometimes, especially because, you know, this was my first fest, you know, so, you know, we're going back and forth to panels and then the market and
if you're a person who's doing things like you were, this time it was a last minute decision. So I wasn't put on any panels, but I would have loved to have done it, but maybe next year. But, you know, when we've done panels, you don't know where to turn. You know, people they recognize you, and I'm not talking ego here. Believe me, I'm just a fan like everybody else. So, you know, you call me a legend. I feel like quoting the Ruddles thing. You know, legend best at the lunch.
Right.
Quite frankly, you know, you're meeting people. You're doing the panels. You're being pulled here. You want to see, you know, your panel. I want to see Mark Lewis's thing. I want to see Lawrence Juber, and you just don't have enough time.
Right.
And it gets like hectic. So you. And then you want to just sit down for about an hour and just chill.
You just get so very crazy. True.
And there is like a Beatle overload at some point, too.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Before we get started, I do want to mention something today. Actually, just today, it was posted on the Daily Beatle, the ex-WOG blog site. And, the news that the Get Back DVD Blu-ray has been delayed indefinitely. We don't know what the problem is. I mean, what was it like? Some kind of technical issue?
Authoring. It said an authoring problem, the article that I read today.
Yeah, authoring just means that there's an issue. I mean, quite frankly, it's you know, from what I heard, it was the stereo to the 5.1 mix wasn't right or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But that should be easy enough to fix. That shouldn't take till December. So methinks there's more to this, and maybe the pressure of maybe hearing a lot of people saying, you know, we can watch it on Disney Plus. We don't have to buy it again. If it's just the same 3 hours, and there's a lot of, you know, as Tony calls them, Dutch imports, bootlegs out here. I saw him at the fest, and quite frankly, I think maybe, you know, Peter Jackson inadvertently put pressure on Apple to maybe beef it up a little bit.
Rightfully so, though. I mean, the double dipping thing has been happening for decades now. You know, and it gets tiresome after a while. You know, give us the big product right away.
Enchilada. Yeah. Come on.
Exactly.
I don't mind if it didn't come out. You know, for a while. If they told us it's going to come out in Christmas of 22, but with 6 to 8 hours or even
with all this extra bonus stuff.
Right. Any bonus stuff at all. I would be like, you know what? I can wait because I can just put on Disney. Right. People have DVR'd it. There are ways to watch it. But, you know, to tell us you're putting it out and then tell us that there's nothing on it, then why put it out?
And even put the original Let It Be film on there as well, because I love how Peter Jackson has described, because he was, you know, Sunday at the fest, he said it should be, you know, the story leading up to the film. So therefore it makes sense that it can be four DVDs. We will buy it. You know, I want to support physical media because I love physical media and I want it to continue.
I and Mitch represent such a small percentage of the buying public. And that is what the people are looking at. People are not going to buy this in droves in physical.
Maybe not, but
if there's bonus, they will.
Right. Yeah. If there's bonus, it will. If you add the Let It Be film to it, people will buy it. You know, if you add another 2-3 hours, people will buy it. And I
don't think
that'll
be the same people that would buy it the other way. I mean, it's the same. It's the same market. What bothers me
the most is that the DVD is out now. You could buy the DVD at Amazon right now, and you'll get it, you know, tomorrow with Prime, whatever. I've seen it, and what I don't like, and this is, you know, I'm not meaning to knock anybody, believe me, because I am so into Get Back. Get Back has been a resurgence for the Beatle legacy, like you wouldn't believe, as you know. But what I saw of the DVD, of the regular DVD, it's just three DVDs piled up on each other on one spindle.
Yes. Lazy.
Are you
lazy?
Kidding? No booklet, no nothing. And it looks like a bootleg. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure that's not what the Beatles or Apple would really want for this project, considering the project has been such a success.
Right.
Yeah.
So, no, I agree. I agree 100%.
So we wait again. That's all.
We waited how many years for the film?
Exactly.
And I don't even like the film. I'll be honest. I hate the film. I saw the film when I was 8 in a drive-in. It's boring. It was boring then. It's boring now. The 8 hours of Peter Jackson is incredible.
Right.
That's incredible. So, yes, if it's remastered and it's the film after the lead up, you know, like you said, the story to the film, that's fine. Right. But I'm not going to buy, unlike what you said, Tom, I'm not going to buy it just because they're adding the movie. I'm going to buy it because there's bonus footage, all the bonus stuff. And if the movie's in there, great. If the movie's not in there, I personally don't care, but it would be nice.
As long as we get the Long and Winding Road in there performed, then that's good. That was a snafu there.
Well, yeah, that January 31st, all of that should be bonus footage.
Yeah, right. I agree. And
because
you know,
the movie just doesn't. It makes you assume that all that stuff was done before the roof, and after the roof, they just said good night and bye bye.
Right.
Not true. So
not true.
Since we see it in Get Back, we see them say we'll come back tomorrow, and then they do all that. Then you just see the outtakes.
Right.
I love the outtakes, but I want the footage too. So maybe that's in the bonus footage, and let's hope that that's why it's being held up again.
Let's hope. Also, it's April 20th. In 8 days, the McCartney tour starts. And Mitch, you guys at the Fab Four Free For All, you've got a special contest that's going to end on what, May 1st or April 30th?
It ends April 30th. Yeah. If you go to YouTube and look up our channel, the Fab Four Free For All, that's Fab number four, free number four, all. Or you just, you know, you listen to what I'm about to say. You can win 2 tickets to the MetLife concert. And, you know, are they great tickets? No, but they're free, which, you know, you've seen the prices of these concerts, especially McCartney's now. And free is good. I like free.
Free for me is good, yeah.
As long as you're in the building, you know. All you have to do is send an email to fab4freeforall@aol.com with the subject line, Paul Got Back, TIX, and then put all your info in the body, any address, everything, so we can send it to you, your email, everything, and do it by April 30th. But again, if you forgot what I just said, you can search our YouTube channel. We have a video for it that you can stop and watch over again and until you get all the directions. So I appreciate that. And it's all courtesy of AEG Live. So it's really, really great. And us.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, that's cool. A great promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's nice that they finally, we can't get any tickets for us, you know, as people who have been promoting, you know, Paul forever.
Right.
Which is okay. I mean, as long as we can give out 2 tickets to people who really want to see him, that's great.
Cool.
Yeah. So they'll always be tickets. That person. They'll be that person who's going to go to that show who has not seen Paul. We aren't in that boat, but there's going to be that person, you know it, who's going to say, thank God I got a chance to see him.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I hope the tickets go to a person just like that. You know, this way they get to experience the excitement of being at a McCartney show. Because like it or not, like his voice or not, like anything or not, being there is exciting as hell.
Nothing like in the
world. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Really, you just get a really cool
As soon as that show starts, I mean, everything just goes away and you're in the moment. And I tell you, when I saw him last time here in Arizona, I was sitting close to a family from Denver. And it was their first time, and just to see their excitement and just the way they reacted throughout the whole show was—I mean,
when the show starts, you don't care. Yeah. You don't care about the old retreads. You just don't.
Right.
I don't care if he does the songs he did. Used, like you said, retreads. I don't care. Right. I mean, it would be nice to, you know, as a real hardcore, you'd like to see him throw something in there that a good solo, you know, cool stuff. But I don't care. Two quick things. 2009, I took my mother, who started me out as a Beatle fan in 1964, because she was a big Macca fan. I took her to the 2009 City Field show. She ended up I had 10th row, but you know, 10th row from the stage is still pretty far, not far, but you know, I'm not complaining.
Right, yeah.
But my mother, because she just had some surgery, they put her on a handicap riser. So it was almost like by the soundboard, she had better seen than anybody. And she
that's loved awesome.
It. And she said to me, she goes, "Are we coming back tomorrow?" I'm like, no. And also in 2011 at Yankee Stadium.
Yankee Stadium.
It takes a lot for me to go to Yankee Stadium as a Met fan.
Right, as a Met fan.
I'm with you. Let's go,
and
Mitch.
I tell you, though,
we're losing 3-0 right now, Mitch.
I know. Believe me, I got the alerts. But quite frankly, I went with my son and my wife, and my son was 9 at that point. And I said to him, because I had no idea what he was doing. I totally didn't look at the set list. And I said, all I wanted to do is the night before. When he did the night before, my son and I just, it was almost like, you know, let's get a cigarette. We're done. You know, I mean, but we actually loved, we were singing so hard, and it was it was just an incredible feeling. So I really, really, you know, can't wait for him to come around. It, again, as you said, it's only 8 days away.
Right.
So I think he plays the 28th, right? Is the first day.
Yes. The 28th. Yep. Yeah. Be the first one. Yeah.
That's exciting.
See,
it is. Yeah.
Is it
Seattle? Yeah. Yeah. Wait a minute here.
No, I
believe so.
L.A. or
I thought it was Seattle or Arizona.
It is
Arizona.
It's it's Washington. Spokane Arena, Washington? Right? Yeah, Spokane. Okay. Yeah, Washington. Yeah. So, but before we get to Tug of War, Mitch, I want to talk to you a minute about Fab Forum, because I mean it's 2022. I mean, you guys started in 2009, I believe.
Yeah, I believe.
Let's talk a little bit about doing a show in 2009 as opposed to doing one now.
You know, it's so funny because I was listening to a bunch of those shows, and when Tony, Rob, and Ken Michaels, your co-host, when we started doing it, we did 30-minute shows. Now it takes 30 minutes to intro the show. But, I mean, literally 30-minute shows. The first show was 15 minutes on Let It Roll, the greatest hits compilation, and Abbey Road. I mean, 50 minutes on Abbey Road. Now, again, like I said, it would take us an hour and a half just to talk about the cover. So, you know, back then, but it was kind of groundbreaking. And, you know, we all... you know, we all talked about it, and you know, Ken was very instrumental. As you know, Ken is very passionate about the Beatles. And it was great because, you know, we got to do something that we really love, and we still love it. And even though Ken and the three of us have split, you know, we're all still doing what we love. So,
absolutely.
What he's doing, we're doing what we're doing. And you know what, as long as we are just promoting the Beatles and their music, that I hate to sound cliche, but you know, that can't be bad.
Right. That's right. You guys actually got to record in the studio though, right?
Yeah, we did. And it actually got crowded because there were three of us on one side and one behind the glass recording it. But you know what, it was, and sometimes it gets heated, you know, not in a bad way, but you know, you disagree on some things, but it was fun. It was different. We didn't know that we'd be quote groundbreaking. And again, please don't take it as any kind of ego thing. We were, I think, the first all talk, if not first Beatle podcast, but definitely first all talk. And we decided all talk because number one, we were too cheap to pay for the music. And also, a lot of people told us, and they still do, that when they hear us discuss an album, they're listening to the songs in their head, or they go back and they'll play the album after the show, or they'll stop the show, you know, since they can, and they'll listen to it, and they'll, oh, I remember that, you know. So, you know, that was kind of fun back then, and it still remains fun to this day. You know, we don't do it as often because, you know, 10 years later, and you've got kids and wives and medical issues and unfortunately health issues with your parents, and so it gets people, you know, life gets in the way, but it's still a lot of fun.
Right. Cool. And then you guys put this on online, right? You guys, did you guys have a website that these were originally posted on?
Well, we had the Fab Forum, and then a lovely group at Sirius stole it. But yeah, stole the name. And frankly, we weren't going to try to, you know, battle the Beatles, so to speak.
Right.
So we changed the name. But yeah, we had the website, Fab Forum, and and it, you know, again, we didn't do anything YouTube wise because it was all audio. Right. The only time we did for YouTube, we started doing that when the pandemic, when we couldn't get together.
Right.
So, and Zoom, you know, actually was a great vehicle.
And, it was.
Because as much as I always say, we all have faces for radio, at least, you know, the Fab Four Free For All gang. It works video wise because if people want to watch us and see our expressions while we're talking, that's fine. But a lot of people still, you know, use us as background. They'll go cleaning, they'll do this, they'll do that. So, you know, but it still remains fun, which is, you know, and there's so much going on in the Beatle world that you can talk about. So there's never going to be any loss for topics.
Right. No, true. And I love the video aspect of it too, because I mean, you like you said, you see the expressions, you see the chemistry, you know, but you know, between, you know, however many, you know, people are talking about any given topic. But I also like that you also started showing parts of your collection on the Fab Four Free For All channel as well, right?
I started that. When we were going through some things, like, you know, each member had their own stuff going on.
Right.
You know, I said, you know what, we should do like 5 to 10 minute videos on Fab Four Free For All finds. And it doesn't have to be anything spectacular. It doesn't have to be greatly produced. You know, just hold up whatever you think is really cool and talk about it, because there are so many people that collect, and not even if they collect, just they're Beatle people. So even if you talk about, look, this shirt was touched by Paul, and give the story, you know, people are going to be fascinated by that. And I love that aspect of it, that you can, you know, you don't have to have a formal, you know, show. You could do just a 5-10 minute video and people will start getting into it.
People still watch them. We have our show called Things We Bought Yesterday and Today, which I it's a thing where, you know, I'll show recent stuff that I've got recently. Andy will show stuff that he bought decades ago. So, I mean, it's really interesting, and people really enjoy those kind of shows, and they see what they might be missing in their collections, you know, and then you build friendships from that.
Well, I've really learned so much from a bunch of websites that I never, and again, I just turned 60. And I've been collecting since 2. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say I've been collecting since 64. And I'll be honest, there are some things that I never ever knew existed, like the multicolor Greek singles that I think, I don't know if you saw that I showed. I have a couple of them now. They go for like $500 each, and people say, "Oh, they're not from the 60s because they're multicolor." Yes, they are. I've been doing research, but I never ever ever knew. You know, and I'm not telling my wife, by the way, how much they cost, but
of course.
But quite
well, how could you? How could you know as a collector in the 70s and 80s, but pre-internet, you bought what you could buy near wherever you lived. You didn't have this online research to find a foreign pressing and know that it existed even.
Correct.
Or, wherever. You didn't have that knowledge.
I passed up so many foreign pressings in the 70s when they were so plentiful in all the stores. Gem Records, I think, used to have like a round label or triangle on the imports. And I used to pass them all up because I didn't know anything about foreign, you know, records or the Beatles imports or anything. And now, you know, now I wish I didn't pass any of them up. You know, it's like $3 for an album. So,
yeah,
you're right. The internet has been a great resource. Also, it's been a great way to collect, but I sometimes wish it wasn't here because I still like the thrill of the hunt. And sometimes I can find 60 of the same thing that I want, and it loses its, you know, it loses like the appeal of me going to Beetlefest. Finding something and going, oh, I want that, and taking it because you can only find it there.
Right.
What the fest was up until 10, 15, 20 years ago.
You used to have to be like literally, I think there were like four or five people deep in the marketplace, and you had to dig through just to get to the table. And then you'd find something and you'd be like, oh, I can't believe, do I want to spend $7 now?
It's right. You know, now.
I think I could have bought a butcher cover in 77 for $50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but again, I was 15. 77, mm-hmm. My father wasn't giving me $50 for that.
Right.
No, so it's all relative.
It is. Yeah. And my relatives were cheap. No, just kidding. So
very cool. Though. Very cool. It is. Collecting, I've been trying to catch up because, you know, I've collected the CDs and tapes and CDs, but now I'm getting back and recollecting all the vinyl, and it has been. And right now I'm also on a mega kick getting as many as the picture sleeves from around the world, from McCartney as well. And that's been a lot of fun too. Yeah. I mean, only the McCartney, right? Well, this is a McCartney show. So.
Well, I know, but you can still collect other, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when I start to wind down with the McCartney, hopefully maybe I will start with the others, you know.
I love finding foreign sleeves of the Beatles where it's got like a 1970 or 69 song with a 1963 picture. You know, I love that because that's cool. I got an Italy one from Strawberry Fields Forever with Penny Lane with the 1965 picture on it that I'd never seen.
Nice.
With all four of them with hats, which I've never seen. And
love
so
it.
I love stuff like that. So there's a lot. I don't think there'll ever be a time when I stop collecting, which is also the reason why the Beatles will never go out of style.
Right. No. Very true. Very true.
The legacy will continue.
Right. All right. Well, let's get on to the our 40th celebration, 40th anniversary celebration of this masterpiece, Tug of War, released in April of 1982. It was a little bit of a wait from McCartney 2 up to Tug of War. 81 saw no release of anything from McCartney. You know, except for what, you know, yeah, which I think the Concert of Campuchia was released in 81, though. But even though it wasn't like an official McCartney release, that was the first time since 62, right?
Yeah,
I believe.
First time, no release.
Yeah, no release. So that was kind of odd, especially if you're mentioning
Lennon murder, you know.
Right.
Unfortunately, put a damper on anything. You know, Paul, you know, with his It's a Drag, isn't it? I think he didn't want anybody to perceive that he was going to quote, I hate to say capitalize, no pun intended, on the death. So I think it was a conscious decision not to do anything.
Okay. That's fair.
In my opinion.
You know, 80 starts off pretty tough for McCartney. We know what, and we don't have to get into that, but, however, later in 80, mid 80, he releases McCartney 2. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that album. Was that something you were expecting after such a great, you know, rock or return to form kind of thing from Paul with Back to the Egg? Well, I mean, talk about McCartney 2 for a second, Mitch.
McCartney 2 came out and I loved Coming Up. Okay, so I'm going on record. I loved Coming Up. I loved the video. I thought it was really innovative. I had no idea we were going to get bogey music and dark room and stuff. It blew me away. And I'll have to tell you, other than I didn't even like Waterfalls that much at the time. I did like One of These Days because it was
Courtney
Ballad.
But
I didn't like the album as a whole. I got it. And if you remember, I think you got it with the Coming Up promo single attached.
Right.
Yes.
With it. So I didn't enjoy the album as much as I really enjoy it now. I just didn't get it. You know, I was 18 years old and I didn't get it. I didn't understand what he was doing, you know, but now it's actually one of my favorite McCartney albums.
There you go.
Right. I mean, we got like little hints here and there from him, like this experimental type side, like, you know, with Morse Moose and the Grey Goose, you know, was kind of little bit or, you know, other little things, or, you know, Picasso's last words was a little different, you know, so, you know, there towards the end when he morphs all the songs, you know, kind
of,
but
well, look at the solo of look at the solo with a little luck with the synthesizer.
Yeah.
Solo. So, I mean, it's,
exactly.
It's obviously
yeah.
Yeah. But it was not. Yes. Yeah, synthesizers and everything. Great.
Right.
But it was no, you know, come on. Really, I mean, and bogey music, like I keep saying,
right.
A lot of it was different. Even Temporary right. Secretary, that was, wow.
Yeah.
I actually liked that when it first came out. A lot of people don't right. even like it now, but I was so
you
happy.
Know it, suckers.
Played out live. It was great.
Right. Yeah. So that was kind of a challenge for you. I mean, he kind of challenged you as a listener to kind of get into, you know, but as a diehard fan, I mean, you accepted it. And obviously you changed your opinions.
I didn't pull the album out a lot. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest. I didn't. I kept listening to Back to the Egg, which I absolutely adored. And, you know, right. I can't believe McCartney himself doesn't ever
right.
talk about it because he doesn't like it because it only sold a million. But right. I love that album. So it was, I just kept pulling that album out and London Town because it was only a couple of years old. And
right.
London Town happens to be...
Yeah.
If not my favorite Wings album, very, very close to the top. But
wow.
So, yeah, go, so there's a, you know, there's, he had so much prior that he was never going to disappoint me. I wasn't going to say, oh, I'm not a Paul McCartney fan because you put out bogey music. I skipped a lot. I did not play it as much, but now I have a much better appreciation for it. Mm-hmm. But it was a challenge at the time.
Right, right. I mean, were you a fan of the coming up studio or live
both.
Or both?
Both, yeah. Because we got the single of the live, right. but the video was the studio, so it didn't matter. If he would have put out a studio version video, which was kind of just, you know, techno and all that, I don't know if I would love it. But because he was so innovative with the, you know, the 30 people that were him. And then Linda, you know, doing that, it made the video so much fun that you couldn't, you know,
right.
you couldn't help but like the song. And
exactly.
I really loved the live version. The live version was great.
Right. And that technique in that video is something that actually gets repeated on a video on the album we're talking about today. The multiplying of the people and doing the same thing for Ebony and Ivory. They do it.
Correct.
They did the same tech. They did the same kind of coming up technique for that video, too.
Right.
Yeah, that must be a challenge, though.
Yeah,
I mean, all of them, and that video coming up was obviously much more of a challenge because he had to record it how many times?
Right,
right.
Because you had to do it separate each time. But certainly, Ebony and Ivory, you know, Stevie wasn't even there, so that was a real challenge.
Yeah,
right. How were you getting your information back then? I mean, did you before March of '82, before the release of Ebony and Ivory, how were you getting your information, you know, how are you being informed that an album was coming out?
I'm not mistaken, and you know, I have to go back now in my memory. If I'm not mistaken, I was still dealing with, I want to say Beatle fan. I think it was out at that time. Was it?
Mitch, were you a member of were you a member of Club Sandwich?
Member of Club Sandwich. Yeah.
Okay.
Of course,
you
were getting, it took forever.
You were getting these then.
It took forever to get to me. he would announce. I don't remember how he announced it, but I think there was the next one is and it was amazing how long it took for that copy to get to me. But yeah, I was a member of Club Sandwich. I still have all my membership cards. And I have the letter at the end when Linda passed and they closed the club. I have a letter because I told them just take my refund money and put it towards Linda's cancer charity. I got a nice letter from them for that. Mm. But I think, and again, maybe my dates are wrong, but I'm almost positive Beatle fan was around.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to check that. But other than that, I think it was just, news. It was, in New York, we did have the Daily News and they were really big Beatle fans. So
they
did publish a lot of stuff. So, I think that's how I got my news.
Yeah, because I'm kind of curious when people here in the States, whether it was for Club Sandwich or Beatle Fan, would have found out that Paul was working with George Martin again. You know, because it's funny because the first thing they do, we all stand together, which ends up being the last thing they release, you know.
Yes. I still remember, though, prior, a lot of the news was you know, again, the New York Post in 79 for Campuchia had the Beatles on the front page. The Beatles are back. So, you know, it was definitely, you know, the newspapers that were printing all the quote gossip of Beatles, you know.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, you're right. George Martin, I think, I'm trying to remember how it was leaked about Paul working with George Martin again. I don't recall, quite honestly.
Okay. Okay, so let's just like a little backstory here. So Paul's still busy. I mean, he's working. He's working with Ringo, getting doing songs with him for "Stop and Smell the Roses." He's also working on, you know, tracks for Linda with he's busy. You know, he's doing these busy with the Rupert the Bear film, which at that point in time was still a film. So right. Working on that. He's also working on remixes or remasters for an eventual Cold Cuts that again doesn't happen in that point in time, but
I wish.
Then in April of 81, I think Lawrence Juber talks about we get the breakup of Wings, which you know, depending on what story you want to believe, because Linda will say something, you know, Paul will say a couple different things. You know, when did you get a sense or the knowledge that Wings finally broke up?
I don't think there was ever anything official.
Really?
It just went away. I mean, Wings just went away after the Japan bust.
They announced it in Club Sandwich. I mean, that the band was officially breaking up.
Yeah, but I don't even remember that, quite frankly. I don't remember that. I just remember after the bust, the bust was such a big thing.
Right.
Wings is officially get disbands in April of 81. That's like 15, 16 months after the Japan bust. So.
After the Japan bust, right. Because I mean, even though if you listen to Denny Lane, you know, they knew it was, you know, right after the bust, but you know, nothing was official. So,
right.
And you know, you still had Denny Lane playing on Tug of War.
Right. Exactly.
So, it wasn't like they were, you know, Wings was still Wings, if you want to say the original three, the core.
Right. Because he brought Danny to Montserrat, of course. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's weird though, because you know, you'll get Linda, who in the mid 80s will say, well, he was just getting tired with playing with musicians that weren't up to snuff as
Which
Paul.
Which is garbage, and then because yes. we know Steve yes. Holly and Lawrence Juber. I mean, they probably were the best musicians he'd ever played with.
Right.
I'm not saying it's the best Wings incarnation. Right.
But technically,
absolutely. And then Paul saying, well, you know, me bringing the drugs was kind of my way of getting out of Wings.
That's just historical revisionism at its finest.
Exactly. Right. So,
which he does a lot.
Yes, right. And then the other one is, you know, George Martin wants to make a McCartney record, not a Wings record, you know, so
he's
got to
break up his incredibly successful band because of that.
Right.
I mean,
he's one of the most successful artists in the 70s, you know, with him and Wings. And then all of a sudden, you know, and still successful because there's still a number one in 1980. You know?
Correct.
So, yeah, which is amazing.
I do. And I don't want to get into this because I think you'll probably hate me for this, but I still don't think Wings should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's fine. No, I mean,
my personal
opinion,
I don't think that Wings was Paul McCartney. You know, the rest were sidemen. And so it's not, you know, again, it could, I know they had a lot of hits and everything, but if Paul McCartney wasn't in Wings, they're not.
Well, look at it this way. If you're, let's say Wings were going out on tour and Paul McCartney was not going out on tour with them,
I wouldn't.
You
go.
Tell me the difference. Nobody. How many people are going to go and to
nobody
would be there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nobody would be there.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know,
it's pretty interesting.
Again, yeah. there's a lot of debate on that, but
what they should have just done is just done a catch-all, throw all the members of Wings with Paul in, and just call it Wings is in, and just have every member that was with Wings and Paul just throw them all in together. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
The whole there's too many people. Yeah.
We won't get into that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, a lot going on. He's recording, as usual, he records enough for a double album.
Yep.
That doesn't happen. But there's George Martin there, who was always a great kind of, you know, buffer. He's always the kind of guy who would say, look, Paul, this isn't that great. Let's work and, you know, move on to the next song. Let's hear that. And in that case, then, you know, with that, we get a really strong, you know, album. You know, we can talk about the whether or not the right songs are on that album or not, but it's still a fantastic album. I mean, do you think George Martin's probably the best producer he's ever worked with in his solo career?
Yes. I mean, he hasn't really worked with a ton. You Padgham,
Nigel Godrich,
Chris Thomas.
I'm not even talking about the 2000s. I mean, prior to the 2000s, he only worked with, I think,
Chris Thomas,
George Martin,
I think that's
and Jeff Emmerich, really.
If you want to say Jeff Emmerich, you know, no slight on Jeff, but I'm not sure he was called producer, you know, engineer and stuff, and he was definitely in there, but. I don't think he worked with too many other, you know, in the 2000s he did, but
with more people, sure.
Yeah, right. I mean, and again, if to say George Martin was the best, George Martin didn't really work with him a lot after, you know, the Beatles broke up.
So that's true. I mean,
he probably worked with him as much as you, Padgham, or Chris Thomas.
Well, this period, this 80 to 84 period, is the most prolific of that partnership, from starting with We All Stand Together up until Broad Street. That was the that 4-year period where they collaborated, and you know, George produced all those,
right?
You know, Tug of War, Pepsi Beast, Broad Street,
Rupert. I have a feeling though that George Martin didn't want another Beatles White Album, meaning, and I don't mean it in a bad way, but I think he, you know, the Beatles could pull off something like that. I'm not so sure Paul McCartney could.
Right.
You know, because I think people would have said you should have whittled this down to one really good album. And I think he did.
I also think in the wake of Lennon's death, it became a very easy, obvious decision to call upon him to produce this record.
Yeah, probably. Just something familiar.
That's it.
He probably needed it also as a cathartic thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so.
Yeah, but you got an interesting thought there with the White Album kind of thing, because he did have some like bits and pieces of songs too, like Stop, You Don't Know Where She Came From, which really wasn't a fully realized song. So it would have been kind of funny if there was a double album and you got this, you know, 1.5 minute kind of thing.
Be What You Can See is...
Yeah, we got that lovely 34-second Be What You Can See. So George Martin felt, obviously, that could go on the record.
Correct. So, and that's fine, you know, and that actually was probably a leftover from McCartney too, because it, you know, with all the vocoder stuff on it. And so, you know, that was great leading into, I think, Dress Me Up as a Robber, right?
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But so I think George Martin knew, you know, I think he knew Paul more than sometimes Paul knew himself. And as you read in Mark Lewison's Tune In, Paul never likes to be told no. But I think George Martin probably was the only person who could tell him no, and he might
very say, true.
I'll listen.
Right. He has that fatherly figure, you know, so he's
and familiarity.
Listen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since 1960. Yeah. But at that point, a 20-year relationship by this time.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So the sessions, they start at Air Studio, they work their way to Montserrat, they come back to Air Studio. Again, enough music to, I mean, I think they're even working on Not Such a Bad Boy as well during these sessions. So, yeah. You know, you've also got the Michael Jackson stuff was also being worked on in this period as well. So stuff that ended up on Pipes of Peace is here as well. So just a lot of material. And then come March of 82, you get Ebony and Ivory. And Mitch, I would love to get your go ahead, Andy, you're going to say something?
I was just going to say that the before, I mean, obviously that's when it comes out, but one of the cool stories that came out with the archive edition was the saga in which it took to get Stevie to Montserrat and was coming.
That's right.
Was he ever coming? And did he told him he was coming on a Wednesday, well, on a Monday, and the whole week goes
Monday.
By. And finally, and then he didn't. I mean, this ordeal, which I didn't know about until the archive edition came out, and reading it again in preparation for this episode. What a how Stevie was just to get him locked in. Sooner or later, he was going to show up, and when he did, he had to just. You know, go with it, you know.
He was playing, he was throwing a Sly from Sly and the Family Stone, you know, showing up whenever he wanted to.
But that was the first leadoff single, so go ahead, Mitch.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, you know, when Ebony and Ivory came, and there are times a little bit back, there are times when you wait for an album and you say, okay, the single is, I hope... is either going to or not going to be indicative of what the album is. And you hope either way, depending on how you feel about the single. You know, there's occasions like Press. When Press came out, I was so hoping that wasn't going to be what Press to Play was about. And I'm right. It wasn't actually, you know, because I couldn't stand the McCartney, darling. I love you, love you, love you, love you. Okay. No, you love me. Okay. No, Oklahoma was never like this.
Yeah. Okay.
But cool video.
Good video, though. Cool, come on
catchy
now.
Song. Always catchy.
Good video.
Come on, stupid song. But Ebony and Ivory came out. Hey, I'm not going to pull punches. Hey, listen,
you're a New Yorker like me. You're a New Yorker like me. See how it is.
Press to Play is again in my top five. So don't get me wrong. But when Ebony and Ivory came out, everybody, I mean, it went straight to number one, obviously, for like seven weeks.
7 weeks consecutively.
Yeah. Correct. And you know, that it gets a lot of garbage now. You know, everybody, Ebony, so corny. If you listen to the lyrics, it's so timely now. It never got untimely because Lord knows, you know, racial equality is not here. But I thought the song was good, but it was sappy, yes, but it was so catchy, and the video also made it so catchy and so ingrained in your brain. So I was really excited about that part, about having the single, you know, come out. But I was so hoping that it wasn't going to be that type of album
throughout. Right. And you liked it, but you didn't want the rest of the album to be that. Yeah.
Right.
And it wasn't. So that was good. But I enjoyed the single a lot. And I still don't get the garbage it gets to this day.
So you're still a fan.
Oh, I'm still a fan of Ebony and Ivory. And you know what? When he played it in 89, some people said that was their bathroom song. I don't get it because it's still one of the biggest hits in his catalog. I don't care.
Absolutely. And it's a good song. Yeah. It's just a good song. It's a good song.
I hate to quote the anthology stuff, but it's Bloody McCartney. Shut up. It really is good. And you know, if you're going to count, you know, it stayed in the charts or at number one. Well, I think Hey Jude was 9 weeks or 7 weeks.
Right.
I think Hey Jude was 7 weeks also, if I'm not mistaken. So
seven or nine.
Yeah, something like that. But still, if you're going to say Ebony and Ivory is a bad song.
But I mean, think about the legacy of this song. It's the only song to go to number one in the UK and in the US for Paul.
Only one.
In his entire career.
Yeah.
And that on that fact alone, it should be highlighted and celebrated as such.
And just the message is needed today. The message is still very, very, it's a required thing. It's never going to be
relevant.
Relevant was what I really wanted to say. It's very relevant. And I just don't like all the hate that Ebony and Ivory gets. Oh, it's a sappy, it's not a love song.
When did you get the McCartney version is on the 12 inch. Was that something you got to hear early on?
Not early on. I remember correctly, it was on a 12 inch, but wasn't it on a promo?
It was the 12 inch, 12 inch single, which you'll get right away.
No, it did not.
I remember that did not come out right away. Because I had no idea. I think there was a bootleg video going around first of the solo song.
The solo one with the jail, the guy in the jail cell video.
That, I mean, it was horrible quality. I mean,
horrible quality
back in the early 80s. But that's how I first heard, and I don't think it was, you know, right away. It was probably a good year later or something that I knew that there was a solo version out. But I personally, I like the solo version a lot, but I like the Stevie Wonder version because it gives it much more relevance with, you know, with an African-American person actually singing as the Ebony.
Right. Band.
You know, it just means more.
Oh, yeah, it does. It's absolutely. And, you know, and I am glad that he did work with Stevie Wonder, who, you know, they both admire each other and they had admired each other for years. So, it, I mean, really to me, it's only common sense, you know, because I think he was working with Michael Jackson around that same time, too. So I'm kind of glad that it was Stevie Wonder on this song and not necessarily Michael Jackson.
Mean, you know, if you, you know, obviously we'll talk later about the tracks, but. Right. I mean, you know, what's that you're doing?
Yeah.
Is just such a funky track. Right. You know, Michael could not have sung the way Stevie does. They're both great, but Stevie's got a different
place, or played keyboards. Yeah.
Or played just, you know, Stevie played what, 3/4 of the instruments on both songs.
Right.
Right.
Well, Michael wasn't doing that.
He wasn't doing that. But I'm glad it was Stevie as well. It was a great collaboration. I wish it would have led to more, but.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think it was until Kisses on the Bottom that they ended up working together again. I know Paul was on another a solo record of Stevie's in the 2000s as well, but I think he was mixed down too.
Wow, that's Paul and Stevie. Yeah. You know? Even Kisses on the Bottom, there's nothing. I mean, I think Stevie just played.
I think it's just the harmonica. I think it's just the harmonica.
There's nothing, on what song?
I don't remember. I have to go back and look. But
I have to look. Yeah. I do remember. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's one of the bonus tracks.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong there because my memory is going. Right. My memory is definitely full. Not almost full. My memory is full.
Done. A month later, the album is out. I mean, was this a first day purchase for you, or did you have to wait?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Corvettes. All right, take us through the day. Take us through the day, if you remember.
Corvettes.
I'm going to take you through any typical solo release day. I knew it was coming out because I think the papers, either the Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, I thought it was a Tuesday release. They used to release stuff on Tuesdays, not Fridays.
Right.
Now.
They still do. Fridays is it's Tuesdays and Fridays now. But it was Tuesdays. Yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, I was 20. I think I drove to EJ Corvettes in the Hicksville Mall, by me, Hicksville, Long Island, and I did this with all the solo releases until Corvettes closed. And I waited, and, you know, while the guy, when they opened, I ran to the record department, and it was already on the wall or in the bin. I'm not sure. I remember George Harrison in 79. That was on the wall. Paul might have been in the bin. And I grabbed it. And it's a cool cover, too. You know, it's very noticeable with the red and the blue cover. But I bought it first.
I mean, looking at that cover, I mean... You know, I don't mean to be like this, like an old person where, you know, to say when you went to go buy records, I mean, that was just like you were mesmerized by the covers a lot of times. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, even more so, you know, back then. I mean, there's some great, don't get me wrong, there's great covers today with new musicians and stuff. But but then, I mean, a lot of work went into these covers. And I really think this is, you know, a really cool one.
It is a cool cover. The only thing is, you know, later on, he started doing where he wasn't on the covers anymore. And I'm like, why? And, or he was very little, or he's distorted and driving around.
Right.
It's like, come on. I you know, you're still a good looking guy, Paul. Come on, get on the cover. And he's very recognizable no matter why.
Right.
So, you know, this album, that's the one thing I hate about CDs. You know, seeing, you know, the little, whatever it is.
Digipack.
Please. Well, don't even get me started on the digipack. But I loved going home and having an album in my hand. Album. You pull out the inner sleeve, hopefully you had the words on it, and I could understand. Now, if I pull out a digipack and it's got the words on it, I've got to get my wife's magnifying glass because I'm so damn old. I can't right. read anything, but or I Google it and then I, you know, I print out big sheets. But back then it was, you know, it was so fun to have the release day of a solo Beatle. Even Beatles. I mean, don't forget, you know, in the '70s, all those Beatle albums, the release days of those were real fun. But I do remember Tug of War because I'm trying to remember if the Rolling Stone review came out after or right before, because it had Natasha Kinski on the cover.
Right.
And on the top banner, it said McCartney's masterpiece.
Yeah, I think it was a five-star review.
Five-star review, right.
Yeah. I think they said it was like the album we all knew he could make or something on that form. But without giving...
Natasha Kinski naked was on the cover.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Natasha's hot.
I was listening. She was. I was watching. Right. I mean, I saw McCartney's masterpiece, but, you know...
Yeah. It might actually have been, she's probably on the cover for the movie Cat People, maybe, I wonder. But anyways.
I'm not sure if that came out really right before the release or after. I wish I remembered. If it came, I mean, I think I remember reading about it and how good the album was and how different it was for him. Because if you really think about it, some of the songs are very different for him. You know, like Pound of Sinking and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's some good stuff on there that's different. So I ran out and bought it.
And that's one of the things Lawrence Juber said when he was on our show, was he said that he had thought the songs that they were rehearsing leading up to the ones that ended up on Tug of War were more of a, not necessarily a band songs, you know what I mean? They were more of a, you know, studio sessions kind of thing, you know, very produced kind of songs.
Like,
you know,
he had the rehearsing Average Person and all these songs like that with things and stuff like that.
Right.
Which ends
but without
Tony calls it piece of poop, but that's all right. Tony calls without it giving that, I don't
okay.
Without giving your thoughts away, how you feel now, just run us through what your thoughts, initial impressions were, you know, first hearing the album.
My initial impression was that I could not stop playing it. And then when Take It Away came out, the single, first of all, that had a picture sleeve with him on it, you know, I think with the cup of tea. And I'll be honest, MTV was huge with that, just like it was with Ebony Ivory. MTV played Take It Away. I mean,
yes, they did.
The point of like throwing up. It was really on that much. And there were two versions, by the way, because sometimes when that little electric shock in the beginning would go, I mean, if you remember when they get a little shock in the beginning and while they're rehearsing, sometimes you heard like a bzzz and sometimes you didn't. So there are different versions of that.
Wow, video. I did not know that.
Oh, absolutely. And I waited for that shock, and then a lot of times they didn't do it for some reason. But Take It Away was such a typical McCartney song and such I'm surprised it only went to number 10 in the U.S.
Right.
I think that could have been a number one song, especially since it was really MTV like crazy. But once you, I mean, when you put the album on, I don't think there's a bad number on it. So I remember just playing it like crazy. I think I ran through three or four copies of it because I had a crappy stereo at that point. But I did buy it a lot, and back then I thought the album was brilliant. I was so happy for him because it was such a, you know, again, not being in love with McCartney too. Another quote disappointment would have probably put his career in a very different direction than it went. Right after that, you know, Pipes of Peace and then Broad Street. So it didn't go great after that. But Tug of War back then was just amazing.
Yeah, out of tragedy comes triumph. And that's what this record really represents in a lot of ways. I mean, everything about it.
Well, you say that and then Here Today and Who Wasn't Crying. Come on.
Right. Everything. So yeah, out of tragedy, right. Out of tragedy comes triumph and a great record from start to finish, hands
Absolutely
down.
Mm-hmm. It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, being the first, you know, 8, 9, 10 during those years, big, huge MTV fan. I mean, any chance I could watch MTV, I was there. And I just remember seeing Ebony and Ivory all the time. I remember seeing Take It Away all the time. And you know, the videos that followed as well, because they did play McCartney a lot in those early days.
They did.
So that was like my first exposure to McCartney as a solo artist. It wasn't until later on, probably like 88, 89, when I finally listened to the album, you know, full, when I was in full Beatles, you know, solo mm-hmm. Beatles mode, that I really got it and started appreciating it. And yeah, like you said, you know, top to bottom, you know, great album. I feel a little differently now about the second half, but we can get to that in a second.
I would agree with you on that. We'll get to that.
Yeah. But let's, Andy, when remember the first time you got to hear this album?
Well, I'm younger than you guys, a little bit younger than you, Tom. So I probably, obviously remember the videos, but I probably just got it because I knew reading all kinds of, you know, discographies and books that it was just the next album that I had to get. You know, I was a 90s Beatles kid, so I had to just snap them all up eventually. So my uncle had a copy, and that was my first exposure to it. And Take It Away, of course, was just an instant ear catching. You can't miss that. I mean, and of course, earworm. The video age. So especially that, I mean, everything McCartney was everywhere. So I saw the videos just like you did, Tom and Mitch. So it was everywhere. So, and I was like, and that was so, again, because if you didn't know what album was on, remember when you watched the video, the little box would come up and it would say, oh, it's on this album. And I'm like, okay, that's the album I have to get this song. That's how I learned anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm glad they did it, because a lot of times for different artists, I learned to love a lot of albums that I would never have given a chance. So.
And then you learn when, you know, growing up and learning from talking to other people and finding out that you could have gone to the video shoot if you were a member of Club Sandwich and if you had the means to go wherever, get there.
Yeah,
you
know, I wasn't going to London.
How cool would that have been? Yeah.
Street,
it would have been very cool
Street,
if I only had like $4,000 at that time, you know?
Right.
Because I was a card-holding club member.
Right.
That's right.
We don't have to go track by track, but Mitch, we'll start with you and we'll get some the highlights for you. I mean, let's do like the top of the top. What is on this album for you the top, the creme de la creme of Tug of War for you?
You know, I love Somebody Who Cares.
Yeah.
Somebody Who Cares is one of the most beautiful McCartney songs, one of the most beautiful songs.
Right.
But he just, I love when Paul picks up like a Spanish guitar.
Right.
Because he does it for like Footprints.
Distractions.
Distractions.
Picks it up and goes.
Yeah. And when he does it, Somebody Happy With You. Beautifully sung, by the way, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one for me. Obviously, Take It Away. Here Today, you know, Here Today has gotten a little less sentimental for me because Paul played the hell out of it in concert, so it loses a little now.
A little bit.
Right.
It's still beautiful. It's very beautiful. But you know, Ballroom Dancing is amazing. So there are certain. I even really appreciate Dress Me Up as a Robber now.
Falsetto.
Yeah,
falsettos. This is like the lost Bee Gees song to me, in my opinion.
Pretty much.
And we interviewed the drummer. We interviewed Dave Maddox our show.
Dave
and
Maddox.
And you just took. I was just about to say the groove.
Right.
Is so un-McCartney.
Right.
I mean, you know, McCartney is George Harrison is the Beatle solo Beatle who tried musically to get away from the Beatle sound. I think the most. He always had, like, you know, Willie Weeks and different people on drums. You know, like, Woman, Don't You Cry For Me. No Beatles song is ever like that.
No,
So, but Paul, you know, he stayed true to what he was and very poppy. But Dressing Up as a Robber, I mean, that no Beatles song is like that in terms of drumming. So I like that song. You know, like you said, Tom, I think the second half, I love The Pound Is Sinking, though, so I mean, I can't say that's on side two, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so Pounds, I mean, there are so many great songs, so I can't really, you know, say the my favorite, but if I had to pick my favorite, I think it would be Somebody Who Cares.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I do.
Nice. I think that's a nice pick. And I love the message because, I mean, he'll do that from time to time where he'll do like a kind of like a, you know, talking to you and kind of like pick you up song, yeah. You know, kind of like, you know, No More Rain or you know, I mean, not No More
too
Rain.
Much
but,
rain. Too Much Rain.
Too Much Rain. Think Too Much Rain.
That's a great
or,
song, by the way.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and you know, who cares? You know, and you know, stuff like that. Happy With You in a way too. Yeah. You know, so I really happy, you know, when he does those songs and tries to, you know, it's just to him. It's a, you know, pick you up positive message that he's so good at, you know.
And
so,
the, I mean, the voice is just perfect on
right.
that.
It's, oh. It is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah,
really Andy, what are the standouts, the creme de la creme on this one for you?
Wanderlust has got to be number one.
Oh, that's a great
right.
one.
Yeah.
Wanderlust, I mean, the singing on Wanderlust, if he has the Philip Jones Brass Ensemble on that song, I mean, the
counter melody.
The counter melody.
Oh, the counter melody yeah. is amazing.
And I always go back and forth, which is the better one, Broad Street or the Tug of War version, and they're both
Tug of War
awesome.
Version, come on.
Yeah, the vocals are you know, so much
different.
Smoother.
Yeah.
They are. Wanderlust, obviously Wanderlust, the title track, although I know Tom's not a big fan of the beginning of
the pushing and pulling bit. The pushing and pulling.
Constipated. I mean, every time I hear it now, I'm thinking he's constipated. He's got to go take a laxative and finally
right.
get it out, you know, and then he says,
yeah. But yeah, Wanderlust, Tug of War, Take It Away, Somebody Who Cares, yeah. Pound is Sinking, Dress. I mean, yeah, there's not a, there's, I mean, that, those are the biggies. Those, that's the kind of like somebody get everything on here. This
right.
is why, for me, it's a top five album, hands down.
Right. Oh,
hands
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah.
What about
yeah.
you,
Tom? It's when I listen to this album, it's always between Take It Away and Wanderlust for me, which are the two best songs on the album. You know, again, since Wanderlust is the, you know, it's played, you know, on the second half. So it's the, you know, song that I listen to, you know, towards the end, it's usually that one. It's just so beautiful, so perfectly sung. And I just love that he has the balls to sing about a situation where he almost got busted. You know?
but listen, nobody knew about it then.
Nobody knew about it. Nobody knew
no,
about
nobody
it.
Knew
but
it
you
was
know,
a drug song, not
right.
a drug song. Sorry, I don't mean to sound
right.
like that. But about
yeah.
a situation with drugs, you know,
exactly.
and he made it into a beautiful song.
Beautiful song, absolutely.
Really
and like you said, yeah, the production, the piano playing on that. I mean, wow. I mean, he is just on top of his game. For this song, and it's top tier. I mean, it's in my top 10 of songs from
yeah,
McCartney.
Let me ask you a question, though, but, and we'll get
yeah.
to it later, but I don't think Wanderlust could have been a single.
No, we'll get, yeah, we will get to that.
Album
you know,
track.
It's a great album track.
I don't think
great
it's a
album
single.
Track.
I don't think it's a single either.
No.
No,
right,
I agree.
Right. There wasn't really songs like that as singles,
right?
Especially during that time, you know. Maybe in the late 70s, he could have, you know, Barry Manilow kind of got away with stuff like that,
yeah,
you know,
well,
a little
he's
bit.
A different artist,
but,
yeah.
but he's a different artist, you know. So yeah, Take It Away, Wanderlust, you know, Somebody Who Cares, obviously, Here Today, Ballroom Dancing. Those to me are
yeah.
the creme de la creme on this album.
They're great.
Yeah, exactly. So then come, I think it was June, we get Take It Away as a single. That, like you mentioned, Mitch, that goes to number 10. I'm curious, because Tug of War is the third single, and let me double check here. That was September. By that time, is it a little too late, do you think? Or because absolutely, you know, because March, Ebony's Ivory is out in March. June... That's kind of a little bit of a long time. Now, I know Ebony Ivory is so successful that you might not have needed another single right away, but that is kind of
yeah.
a bit of a long time, don't you think, between
I
singles?
Think, quite frankly, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Paul had the video ready to go, and he didn't want to not use it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was very proud of that video
right.
For the song. I think that probably coaxed him into making it a single. Because he knew the video would be played, because the video was
right.
a lot.
Yes.
But it didn't help the charting. I think it went into the 40s. You might want to check out. I think
which
was,
one? Tug
of War?
War?
I thought it was like 43.
Yeah, it was 53. 53.
53. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, could it have been different? It was a long wait, but back then, you know, they put out a ton of singles to give the albums legs because they weren't putting out albums every year like people do now. So, Paul waited 3 years, 2 years, you know, it wasn't like the Beatles where you got two a year. So I think maybe if he would have chosen something like Ballroom Dancing, a more up-tempo,
upbeat,
I think it would have been great. I think Tug of War got lost on the radio. It wasn't played a lot on the radio. It was played a lot on video for MTV, but I don't remember hearing it on the radio, whereas Take It Away I heard on the radio all the time.
All the time,
it was that upbeat rocker. I think if he would have put out, definitely if he would have put out Ballroom Dancing, I think that would have done well, but I don't think there's any other singles on the album other than maybe
besides Ballroom Dancing because, you know, the Kinks had a hit with Come Dancing, and you know, and I thought was it after this? But
83, I think that came out.
Was it?
Yeah, I thought it was right around the same time.
Yeah, but it was 83. I thought it was also I think if he would have put out Ballroom Dancing, I think he's still Paul McCartney, and you know, he could have done a cool video for that, just like he did for it in Broad Street. So I think, and I think that was a missed opportunity with Broad Street too, because he could have put, he maybe could have put that out Ballroom Dancing as a single then, using the Broad Street version to promote the album, and on the back of, you know, Tug of War still being, you know, McCartney's masterpiece. So I think he could have done well, but. I don't think there's any other song on the album that he could have released other than that.
So, so three singles max on this album. However, we got to change the third one.
I think so. You know, it's great to be hindsight, but I think Ballroom Dancing would have at least gone top 20.
Right. Yeah. Now knowing, what we know now, knowing what songs were recorded at this time, we know we've got Rain Clouds. We know we got I'll Give You a Ring. We know we got Ode to a Koala Bear. You know, so is this album perfect in your sense? Could you replace a song or two on this album with one of the tracks that didn't end up on the album?
No.
Really?
No. Wow. I'll Give You a Ring and Rain Clouds and Ode to a Koala Bear, they're all perfect B-sides. They are. Okay. I don't think any of them were better than anything on the album. I don't. Right. I mean, I'll Give You a Ring. It's a great song. It's, you know, it's a bounce.
I think so.
But again,
I mean, that could have went on there. Maybe, I mean, we could have taken Be What You See off and put thrown that.
Be What You See is just an interlude thing. I don't.
Yeah, that's only 34 seconds.
Yeah, I don't even think that's a song. I mean,
I know a lot of love doesn't get it with Carl Perkins. I mean, that doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of that. I mean, the track that they did together, you know, my old friend, was it?
My old friend.
I mean, that's beautiful. That didn't get released until, you know, years later. I would kind of wish that they would have did that as a duet, but you know what? That was, you know, recorded the last day Carl Perkins was on Montserrat. So maybe there wasn't enough time to really work on it.
So with the guest stars on this album, like with Carl Perkins on Get It and Stevie Wonder with obviously What's That You're Doing? Those are just songs that kind of came out of impromptu jams that became songs. So if you're looking at this from the other perspective, maybe those songs could have been, they were just jams. They were not, they became songs. And if they, you know, you could, you know, I'll Give You a Ring and put that on there instead of that. Maybe, I don't know, you know,
I don't know. I think as far as My Old Friend, if they would have worked on it, I don't think you could have had, I don't think Paul would have wanted to put both quote John Lennon songs on the album.
Well, there wasn't nearly a note. Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I don't really think it's because Carl Perkins wrote that. I mean,
I get it, but it would come off as that. And also, you know, Paul with his ego here today is probably, other than maybe Empty Garden, is probably one of the most incredible tribute songs ever.
Right.
You know, you can't, I just don't think anything else would have been, I don't think anything is replaceable. You know, Get It, maybe, because it doesn't really fit on the album.
Right.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you replace that with is I'll Give You a Ring really, if you, is that flow well with
to me album? To me, maybe. Maybe I'd have to put it on. I have to do a playlist, you know. But I
would not.
I love the song so much, though. I love the song so much, though.
It's a perfect B-side.
Right. Okay. Fair.
I think Rain Clouds fits. I think Rain Clouds fits on the album better than I'll Give You a Ring.
Maybe
I would say yes. I would say yes, but you know, again, it's every song is now. I mean, we all say this now, 40 years later, but. You know, looking back then, you know, it was such an eclectic. I think it was eclectic, and now it's
Everything
is ingrained in our brain to the point where if we try to change out something, well, our brain says no, you can't do that. You know, so maybe get it if we had to, but you know, when you hear it and that laugh at the end of Carl Perkins is very very haunting when it goes into Be What You See.
Yes,
it is. Right. It's kind of spooky. Right.
So,
like that.
Yeah. You're good with him not releasing Here Today as a single, right? I mean, it's good just as a standalone. I mean, we talked about a possible fourth or single. What do you think?
I think he would have thought he was trying to capitalize on.
Capitalize. Right.
And he being on the album, it's part of an album. But if he put it out as, I am so sure. You know what? I really would love to know who was the president of Capitol at the time, because I'm sure they told him, you need to put this out. This is like Empty Garden. Empty Garden was released as a single. But
Those years ago was number two, I think, you know.
Yeah, which I still think is a missed opportunity if they would have put.
I wonder if it was still that
George Paul and Ringo on the picture sleeve, it would have went to number one. But I do. I'm convinced that if they would have put. You know, they not that they would have said it's the Beatles. They could release it as George Harrison. But if they would have put a picture of all three of them on there, any picture, I don't care. It would have, I think it would have pushed it above, what was it, Whitney Houston? What was number one at the time? I don't even remember.
It was Betty Davis Eyes.
Oh, Betty Davis Eyes. Yeah, well, you know, I think her eyes would have went down a little bit. So I do. I think Here Today would have been seen too much as trying to capitalize on the American to get a hit song. And I think having it on the album was perfect because everybody knew it was there and everybody played it and everybody cried. Right. So I think he did the right thing.
Cool. You know, let's just talk about it now, this album now. I mean, as we're celebrating the 40th anniversary, where this, you know, should go in McCartney's canon. Andy, I mean, obviously this album still is very powerful to you. I mean, it's you know, up there in the, definitely up there in the top 10, maybe top five, like I think you said earlier today.
Top five.
Yeah. Yeah. But before that though, let's talk about, you know, does this album hold up now? I mean, do you feel the same about this album now as the first time you heard it? I mean, has anything changed for you?
Not for me.
Interesting.
Not for me either. I'm going to probably shock you when I tell you that I like this album better than Band on the Run.
No, that's not shocking.
Band on the Run is his
as do I. Yeah.
Right.
There are so many McCartney albums that I like so much better than Band on the Run.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hey, right here, my friend. Right
Band
here.
Band on the Run is his masterpiece. Right. You know what? Right. I can name London Town. I can name this. I can name Chaos and Creation. I can name so many more. You know, I personally love Wings at the Speed of Sound and Venus and Mars more than Band on the Run. I do. Personal opinions. But, I mean, Band on the Run was great for its time, and it was McCartney's coming of age again as McCartney. But But since then, he grew up and made even better stuff. And Tug of War, to me, is like the epitome of Paul. I would say it's in my top two.
Wow. There you go.
Love it.
I think it's that good to me. I think it holds up. I can put it on my record player, for those of you who know what that is. I can put it in my CD player, my record player. I don't care where I listen to it, on Spotify. Right. And I don't, it's not anything I do not skip a track.
Right.
I mean, just a quick side note. Well, we forgot to mention it. I did anyway. With The Pound Is Sinking. Listen, you know, pound for pound, you find me a better 5 second, 10 second vocal lyric with Paul during the Pound Is Sinking with the "Oh no, it didn't happen." Come on, man. That scream.
Oh yeah, that scream there. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. He still had it.
In great form.
He still had it then. He still had it. Oh, darling. I think it was even better at his vocals from 80 to 84. I think that might have been his best period, you know, with the songs like that and Wanderlust and No More Lonely Nights and maybe even So Bad.
In the Dirt, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, We Got Married, he does something like that too.
He does. Right. That's the Paul, Oh Darling. That's the Paul, Oh Darling voice when I hear that.
Right.
That's what he's channeling. It's incredible.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But for me, back to the egg,
by the way,
go ahead.
You know, his voice with that scratchy. I wasn't a big fan. I love the album. No. Don't get me wrong. But Paul's voice with the scratchiness, you know, obviously from smoking and
old
whatever.
Old Time, Sir, and all that.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you could even hear it on Winter Rose, though, you know, which is a beautiful song. But I think. I think he wanted this album, especially after Lennon's murder. He knew it was coming out after that, and I really think he wanted this album to be something special.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I think still that this is close to a masterpiece as any artist could ever do. In my opinion, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of What's That You're Doing, but I still enjoy it. It's over six minutes, almost six and a half minutes long.
Something? Yeah.
Yeah, 6:22.
I'm off by a second.
Yeah, no. However, it's a little long, and I like it, but I think that fits more on a McCartney 2 than it does on a Tug of War.
Sequencing could have maybe helped with, like, you go from Somebody Who Cares, which is a beautiful ballad, great, into that. If that had gone from Somebody Who Cares into Here Today, man, forget about it. You'd be a puddle of tears.
Well, that might be too soft. I don't know. maybe the Pound Is Sinking. I mean, but you're right. Sequencing, but to me, it's weird. I never thought of, because it opens with Tug of War, and
you
know, normally you want the album to open up with like maybe a Take It Away.
Take It Away. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I never ever thought about this because this album is so good. The sequencing never bothered me.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would really want to take off this album is Get It. I mean, that's just the one track, unfortunately. And Carl Perkins is terrific. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I think it kind of just like sticks out like a sore thumb on this record a little bit.
I think it could have been on Pipes of Peace.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Because
Pipes of Peace was all leftovers, I think. This would fit well with it.
That could have went on Pipes of Peace, and Tug of Peace could have came off instead.
Oh well, and whatever.
But I do want to give some love to Dress Me Up as a Robber. I love his vocals on that track.
On it, Tom, as you called it, the Lost Bee Gees track.
Right, it is the Lost Bee Gees track. I mean, but every once in a while, I'll have different views on Ebony and Ivory. Yes, it's a great message. It's a wonderful duet, which, you know, in the 80s, duets were just massive business. There was just so many duets going on in the 80s. It was just ridiculous. But great message. But there's times where I do kind of get a little tired of the song, and then I won't play it for a long time. Then I'll hear it, and I'm like, yeah, this is just a great tune, it's a very catchy tune.
When you're listening to the album, do you skip it?
No, I won't skip it necessarily. Okay. It's still a good song, very good song. So I really don't know if, because some people might say it's dated. I don't know if that's
I don't think so. I think a lot of Press to Play is dated because of the production. But I don't think. I think that's the great thing about George Martin Productions. You can listen to America, the group America that he produced.
And
it sounds, as fresh today, Sister Golden Hair, it sounds like it could have been on the radio today.
Yeah. Right.
I think he had that kind of touch where he doesn't have any kind of dated production.
But timeless.
Yeah. And I think that's what he did with this. I think Tug of War doesn't sound dated at all. And I disagree on Ebony and Ivory. I don't think it sounds dated. I think it just sounds like a lush production. I don't think it's
polished. If there's one word I had to describe this album, it's polished. It's polished from start to finish.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, cool.
All right, Mitch, I'm going to put you on the spot. You said this was going to be your top two. What's the other one?
I don't care. I'm going to say London Town.
Wait.
London Town. Yeah, I have to say, I can't wait for the archive edition.
Yes.
Because
yes.
London Town, I mean, yeah, maybe name and address has to come off it, but London Town to me is such a great Wings album that I know it's mellow and everybody, you know, it's 420 when we're recording this today, so people will probably, you know, let's light one up and hang out on a boat. But no, but quite frankly, London Town. Right.
Captain says there'll be a bus. This one's not to be.
Of course, and there was. Wanderlust. But to me, it's got to be London Town. So it's Tug of War and then London Town.
There you go, yeah. Brother.
I mean, look,
that's awesome.
The McCartney album. So, I mean, I could say any album and it's okay because they're all really good, except Driving Rain. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, listen, I agree with the Band on the Run. It's a great like starter. Like, you know, Andy and I, last week we talked about, or maybe 2 weeks ago, we talked about what are like the five albums we would give like a beginner. And obviously I think you have to give them Band on the Run.
Oh, you have to. Yeah.
And you have to give them Tug of War. You know, Tug of War, Flaming Pie, Ram.
Flaming Pie.
Ram.
That's number three for me.
Yeah. Ram. Okay. And maybe Chaos and Creation. You know, you give them a mix of a wide, you know, of multiple decades, in my opinion.
Chaos is so good, but when I listen to it now, it's a lot more mellow than I remember.
Mm. Oh, for very mellow reason, record.
It's a lot more mellow.
Yeah.
It's a great album. I mean,
yeah. There's not a lot of upbeat songs. I mean,
I love New. New is great.
Finally. New is great too. So but I think Chaos from Top to Bottom is the better album though.
Yes. Oh yeah, I agree with you. So there, but again, you know, giving a person five McCartney albums, I mean, what has he done? 40? What do you do? You'd be shortchanging that person. Put them on the island and give them 40.
And give them the whole, give them the 52 years give worth the of whole music and say, here you go. Good luck.
Give them the fireman. Throw it in. Burlington. Here you go.
All right. We'll talk to you in about 10 years. Go.
Yeah. Well, this was great. Mitch, thank you for joining us absolutely. I mean, good. Plug away. Plug anything you got going, Fab Four, obviously.
No, again, just the Fab Four free-for-all. We still love doing what we're doing. And Tony and Rob and I are friends who we always say, you know, if we weren't doing it for the listeners, we'd be sitting in a diner booth, you know, just eating and which we did on a show, by the way. We did show. Yes, we did. Which was kind of gross and kind of fun at the same time. you know what? We wanted to, for those who need to just get a little backstory on that, we had just come from, I believe, the White Album listening party.
Listening session,
and we, you know, when we go to those things and we come back, we want to do something right on the spot so we get the excitement. Excitement, so people know how we felt instead of having a week to think about it going, well, you know, we want to make sure, oh my God, did you hear that? Yes. So we were at the diner and they didn't mind us recording. So if you ever listen to that, it's kind of actually fun. But Fab Four Free For All, you know, again, everybody who does podcasts is doing something great. So, you know, I'm going to plug all you guys too, because every podcast is doing something different. You know, whether it's Richard Buskin and Eric Taros, you know, Beatles Naked, or you guys, or, you know, Talk More Talk. Everybody's doing something different. And I think that's what's really special about the Beatle community.
Yeah. I mean, and there's so many out there now, like you said, doing different things. Right. And, you know, COVID brought a lot of new shows back. I mean, people had time to do shows, and it is one big community. And, you know, it's nice to see that we can come on each other's shows and stuff like that. We get along, you know, we I can, you know, message you for like an advice or a question and vice versa. We just love, you know, interacting with people that are doing their shows as well. It's just a lot of fun seeing what's going on with them. So,
and everybody,
this has been a lot of fun.
Perspective.
Right.
So, you know, everybody does. So all of our shows, you know, we the one thing I will say before we go is that, you know, sometimes people will write to us and accuse us of being too silly. And quite frankly, we consider ourselves infotainment. We want to give you as much information as possible, but we want to entertain you. I'm not going to sit there and read off Wikipedia, because, you know what? Everybody can do that.
Do that, right.
All heck. We don't want to do that. We want to make it, you know, again, we are three friends for 35, 40 years now. So we are going to do a little inside jokes, and most of the time they're Beatles stuff. So we like to entertain. And I think that's an important part of,
it's authentic.
You know,
it's more authentic.
You
know? Right.
Yeah. And again, I think everybody has different perspectives. So all the shows, the more the merrier.
And it doesn't feel, and it doesn't sound like you're reading from a script either. You know, you guys are, it's all about the chemistry between, with you guys. And it's great.
Yeah, and thank God we have good chemistry. So, and hopefully we'll continue to do so, or else, you know, I always kid around and say, Rob, if we drop you, Tony and I are doing a show called Two of Us. And if Tony drops both of us, he'll do a show called Beatles One. So, you know, there's always room for
there you go.
Other podcasts.
Right. Andy, what do you got going? I know you got your new channel. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I got a new sub channel of Two Legs called Andy's Music Vault, The Other Leg, and I've got one episode up, and I've got a two-parter coming in the next few weeks on Bob Dylan. So stay tuned for that to drop in a few weeks.
Yeah, and this is all the other artists and bands you love. I mean, Andy's a big prog guy, so you know, check that out, and he's going to have a lot of great new episodes coming.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to come down the pike on that outside of the Beatles universe, which is balanced. It's what, you know, makes us
exactly.
Tick, so
absolutely.
Listen, we monkeys too. So, and Big Star, XTC, which everybody's an offshoot of the Beatles, and quite frankly, it's all good music.
Right.
Absolutely.
So for Two Legs, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Our YouTube channel. Thank you, everybody, for helping us get to our goal of 1,000 subscribers. We really appreciate that. Very cool. And, you know, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep bringing these episodes, and we'll be live again soon, I'm sure. So, Mitch, thank you for joining us. It was great.
Thanks
having you
me.
Back. And, you know, everybody out there, it's good seeing you. And next week, we will have Adrian Allen back to talk about his new World Tour 8990 book. So be on the lookout for that. So
does the second half of the book get better like the tour did? Sorry. The second leg of the tour got better. Sorry.
Better? You go. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see him until 93, but, you know, yeah.
That's all right.
But anyway, so thank for you. Andy and Mitch, I'm Tom saying have a great day and a beautiful night, everyone. Take care.
Take care. Thanks, guys.